This is Colourful Radio.
We're very, very pleased to say that in our hot, important celebrity, no, I don't like the word celebrity, pioneering public service chair, where previously the likes of Baroness Scotland and David Lammy and Vince Cable have sat, is a man who bestrides them all like a colossus. He is of both Nigerian and Yorkshire stock. Good old Freddie Truman and Freddie... No, actually, Freddie Flint of his Lancashire name. Stock Lord Victor Adebowale. Would you like to get closer to your mic, please?
Hello.
Good morning to you.
Victor will do.
Now, the last time I saw Lord Victor Adebowale, I was walking through Parliament Square on my way to Trafalgar Square through Whitehall, and I saw this tall, kind of handsome, bedreadlocked figure. And I thought to myself, hang on a minute, I recognise that smile. Now, usually when you bump into political figures, they're either in power, or they've lost power, or they're aspiring for power. And I wasn't sure, Victor, where to put you. Where should I put you?
Neither of the above.
Are you sure?
Yeah, just a black guy with dreads walking through
please.
Parliament Square.
Come. False modesty is overrated in this studio.
I learned a long time ago that there's only one way out of power. There's two things power does to you. One, it weakens you, and the other is the only way out is down. So don't aspire to it. You know, the best leaders are those that arrive by accident.
What's it like being a people's peer? Because I think they were created in about, was it 2001?
The 2001, people's peer? I think it's a blessing and a curse. The curse being the concept. I mean, the people's peer thing was a complete invention, though. Somebody said to me, a friend of mine I was at tea with, whose mother is rather old-fashioned, said, well, you know, he's not a real lord, is he? He's one of those people's peers. It's used as a kind of, it was a complete invention by Alistair Campbell, so yes. I actually don't like it. I don't think it's meaningless, really. I'm a crossbench member of the House of Lords.
That means you're independent,
God,
doesn't
help
it?
Me. Yes, I don't belong to a political party, so I don't really use the term people's peer, because it's a complete, it was just a way of stopping the press from battering us to death, I think.
Do you get the impression that some of your so-called real peers, it's a terrible term, but peers who came in through the traditional route looked down on the people's peers because of the way in which they were sort of invented, as you say, by Tony Blair's former spin doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was in an interview once, I think it was Anthony Howard, actually, who I thought was quite rude, because there is this
assumption. He's a political commentator, isn't he?
Yeah, because I wasn't born to it, you know, it wasn't hereditary. I haven't climbed the greasy pole of some political party, and I certainly haven't and never would pay a penny for it. I'm not white, I'm middle class and all that. At least I'm not from middle class stock, therefore I'm not a real peer. And it's just nonsense. The fact of the matter is that a group of people went through a process where they were encouraged to apply, rather like people apply for a job.
Yeah.
I applied, 5,000 other people applied at the same time, and I got the job. I mean, I can't imagine anything more fair. But once you've got the job, you've got the job. So, but I do feel there is a kind of hint that perhaps my ilk, my kind of arrival in the House of Lords is somehow not legitimate.
Right.
But you know what? I think it's as probably as legitimate as anything else.
Do you notice this in the tea rooms, in the corridors,
not so much,
where you
not
sit
so
on
much,
the ermine?
No, not so much. Not so much in the tea rooms or the corridors. And I don't wear ermine, but it's it itches. But I do detect it as a theme in some of my connections with the media, I think.
Right.
And how often, how much time do you spend in the Lords?
Well, according to the Sunday Times, not enough. But I generally go in about once a week. I don't live there. I don't live there. I like to spend my time with out there doing. Yeah. I've got a job to do, so I do it. And I go in. I have a rule, really, which is I only speak when I've got something to say and when I think it'll make a difference. I only vote on things I understand. So I don't speak very often and I don't vote very often. But I like to make an impact when I do speak.
Why did you apply to be a people's peer in the first place?
Because the way in which, and it worries me actually that not many people know this, but you know, the House of Lords is an important way. You know, it makes the laws. Mm-hmm. It makes the laws. It filters laws. It acts as a check on government to some degree. And I've been a campaigner for most of my 30-odd years, and if you're a campaigner and somebody offers you the opportunity to get into the legislature, who am I to say no?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's why I did it. I don't particularly care about the titles or the But
Baron Adebowale.
It is about, and I never confuse access with influence.
Ah, okay.
But I do think, you know, it is a privilege, and it's something I take seriously, but I don't overplay it.
You talked about something like 30 years of public service. You're currently the chief executive of Turning Point.
I am.
What do you do with there?
Well, Turning Point is, we like to think we are the country's leading not-for-profit social care organisation. We are a social business. We provide services to people with mental health, learning disabilities, substance misuse and unemployment challenges. Mm-hmm. To about 140,000 people in 250 locations. We employ 2,000 people. Our turnover this year will be about £80 million.
80?
Yes.
Wow.
And we are a public service. That's what we do. That's what I do.
My.
And, amongst other things.
Yeah, I mean, this is your latest position, but of course, you've been chief executive of other big organisations as well. Centrepoint, you sit on the board of several organisations. You're a patron of many others. It's a full life, isn't it?
I get about. Well, I think, you know, if you've been as lucky as I've been and I've worked hard, I guess, then there are things that I'm interested in that I can't help it. You know, there's things I've got to do.
Because, you know, I'm one of those guys who I talk to a lot of people and they talk about a calling, and the calling can come to the priesthood, it can come to work as a nurse in medicine, to the police service, to the ambulance service, or whatever. When did your calling come? Because you clearly have one.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is a calling, to be honest.
Is it just a job then?
No, it's curiosity. You know, really? I'm a very curious person. I like to know what's going on. I had a kind of balloon debate with myself at an early age, and there are certain jobs that I don't get me up, they don't float my boat, they don't buzz me. What I do gives me a buzz. It's challenging. I get to talk to some fascinating people. I think the services that I've worked in make a difference. They change lives, and it gives me a great amount of intellectual, emotional energy. And that's great. And, you know, I could be working in Dixon selling video recorders, and that's fine too, but I'm not very good at it.
You mean Courage Digital?
Well, Courage Digital, yeah, it's one of the only jobs I actually got fired from, but that's another story.
You started volunteering when you were quite young, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I did. Oh, God, you know, you've been doing your digging, haven't you? Across the world for MI5.
This is colourful radio, mate.
I know, that is scary.
Yeah, I did.
Out of a sense of curiosity, I got involved in housing, in social housing and housing cooperatives in particular, and I got bitten by the bug. I became a bit of a housing bore, to be honest. I read everything and made connections and talked to everybody, and you know, I didn't have many girlfriends because it's not an opener, is it? What do you think of the Housing Finance Act 1977?
Not the best line you could have employed.
But you know, I am.
But it's paid off. You voted one of the top 25
Crikey,
people in housing.
Scaring me. You're scaring me.
I've been stalking you for years.
Yes, I was, and it was a real. That was a real surprise, to be honest. I think you know, my shiny black face posting it was a surprise, and again an honour. It's I don't know, really. I never set out to appear on those lists, and in fact, it should be said that people appear on those power lists usually. The really powerful people don't appear on lists.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's not, you know, it's nice to be recognised, I guess, and I hope it gives, you know, black kids in particular, the idea that, you know what, you can do what you like and you can do what you want and you don't have to. You can aspire to service, you can aspire to do things that change lives.
Excellent. We've got Lord Adebowale in the studio. He was one of the first people's peer. He's been a Lord since 2001, the same year he joined Turning Point as chief executive. He's from Yorkshire, born to Nigerian Yoruba parents. I've got the names here, Ezekiel and Grace.
That's right.
And he was educated in Wakefield. That's right. God bless him. We need to drill into your Nigerian and your Yorkshire roots very shortly on the programme. But he's an inspirational figure. He appears in a number of lists. I know he's a bit embarrassed about that. But he is an influential figure right here in this country, especially in public service. So if you want to ask him anything, you want to put any points of view across, this is the time to do it. Here's what you do. You go to our text number. It is 80818. That's 80818. 1818. You can start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, and then your message, or you can email us.
Yeah, go to the website, colourfulradio.com, and click on email me. You can also give us a call if you want to go live, probably after 9:30, 0800 999 8090. That's 0800 999 8090. There's any questions you want to put to Victor.
Are you into music? I presume you are.
I do like my music, yeah.
Not because you're wearing locks or anything. You know, just, by the way, are you the only dreadlocked peer?
Yeah, I am, yeah. With my own personal bodyguard. Yeah,
really?
Security team now, manager.
Okay. Do people assume you can dance really well at peers' parties?
Well, it is. I mean, I did have a peer who shall remain nameless walk up to me, and it's really interesting, actually. I grow dreads because I can.
Yes.
Looking at Henry's shiny.
Yeah, thank you very much. My head has been in recession since the mid-90s. Yeah.
Since he tried to do a Billy Ocean.
Cool,
yeah, since my days of Billy Ocean, yeah, that's right, in the mid-80s, yes.
He walked up to me and he tapped me on the shoulder and he went, "You fraud." And I thought, what does he mean? And I think, you know, the dread thing can, it means something to people. So, yeah. You know, just because you, I mean, I just think it's hair. But,
yes.
There are lots of black people with dreads who, you know, like there are lots of white people with long hair and nobody thinks that they're hippies. But it's I don't know, it's odd. Because the idea that a member of the House of Lords can have dreads is somehow seen as you know, odd, as some sort of, he meant, i.e., you're down with the kids because you've got dreads, but really you're a member of the House of Lords, as though you can't be both. It's just a really weird thing, but I like my dreads. So
what a cheek. I can understand if a dread on the road, you know, really takes the religion seriously, came and said something to you, but a peer saying it to you.
Well, I mean, I thought it was odd, but, you know, we live in a very multicultural, multi-identity world, and just because you wear dreads doesn't mean that you're a Rasta.
Mm.
And simply, you know, just because you've got short hair and you're white doesn't mean you're a member of the National Front or a member of the Army. Yeah. It's just hair, folks.
And also, what's it got to do with him?
Well, that was the question that sprung to my mind as he walked away. But I have also got an email from some people in Nigeria who saw me on television, and the question
They're horrified.
Well, it was this sort of
They were
quite a lot with hair like that, you know. It was like, really, and I just do about, you know, it's just hair, folks.
What about your parents? What do they think of your hairstyle?
My mother is cool about it, actually. I mean, I think she'd probably prefer that I was had the bonzer look, the built for speed look. But, you know, it's just hair, you know.
Excellent. All right, well, you said you're into music. Do you like a bit of George Benson?
I love George Benson.
This is Colourful Radio.
We've got Lord Victor Adebowale with us in the studio, and we've got to our first email to you.
Oh, right, crikey.
And it's from Tayo.
That's a surprise.
That's right. And he says, I remember when Victor was top chief at Patchwork many years ago.
Crikey.
I was a tenant at the time. I don't know if I can say this to you. I'm going to tell you directly what Tyle says. Okay.
Don't say if it's negative.
It's probably bad news.
Yeah. Are you tough?
I'm fairly tough, yeah.
Do you think you can take this? Yeah,
probably.
All right, okay. He wasn't very nice.
You should show me.
Well, sorry, just being realistic. But you look, if you're a leader, you're going to put noses out of joint.
I am, yeah.
Whether you're Barack Obama.
Afraid so.
Whether you're Jerry Rawlings.
Afraid so.
Whether you are Olusegun Obasanjo or Umaru Yar'Adua, the current president of Nigeria.
Yeah.
However, got to give him his props, as I see he's risen very high with his title and his status within social housing. And Tayo goes on to say, well, hopefully, you know, you become, you know, a humble person and whatever, whatever. He was always very ambitious.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, as for the dreadlocks, I can emphasise, I think you mean sympathise here. I've had my locks on and off for years. The disgust and derision I cause when visiting family in Nigeria. However, I'm noticing more and more Nigerian folk catching on to the lock trend.
Well, you know.
Thank you, Tayo.
Thank you very much, Tayo. I mean, honesty is a good thing. I mean, I've no doubt people, I have done things, no doubt, that people don't like. But I'm ambitious. Self-doubt and ambition are the two things that I've got plenty of.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I'm getting more emails coming through. Here's the website details, colourfulradio.com, and click on email me. And we've got another email. This is from Peter. And he says,
oh, it's a nice one.
No, it's fine. I am a house. Just imagine being Alicia Dixon at the moment, eh? Or President Obama. I'm a housing professional for the past 19 years and seeking a career change into project work with youth and mental health, but have a criminal record for common assault, which is out of character and happened 3 years ago. What do you recommend that I do to seek volunteer work in this field to allow me to progress in this field? That's from Peter, who's concerned that this may act as a mark against him.
Well, the first thing is you've got to be honest about it. A lot of organisations now, after register with the Criminal Records Bureau, you have to be registered. I mean, I'm registered, you know, I have to declare my... you have to be investigated to ensure that you're safe to work with, with children in particular and vulnerable groups. There are lots of volunteering opportunities, and there are organisations out there. If you go to the NCVO website, National Council of Voluntary Organisations, there are organisations like Catch 22 and others that will take you, actually, providing that you're open with about your past, and that's a sign that you're serious. I think it's a real shame that people who have been have got convictions, in a sense, those are the people that we need to give a second chance. And it's difficult.
But I suppose it depends on the nature of the conviction.
Well, I think it, obviously, it depends on the nature of the conviction. But in a sense, if you've been punished, you've been punished.
Yeah.
The question then is how serious you are about your future. Because the danger is that if we don't give people a second chance, then we're giving them no chance. If you give people no chance, then you're basically asking them to be recidivists. So I think, you know, you need to be honest about your past. You need to take your future seriously, and volunteering is exactly what you need to.
Fantastic. Okay. You grew up in Wakefield.
Oh, by the way, sorry, get some qualifications as well if you can.
It would help, wouldn't
that
it?
That would help.
Wakefield in the 60s.
Born in 1962. Oh, I'm glad you can't tell, actually. Yeah, I'm only 19, haven't I done well?
Wakefield in the 60s for a black guy, what was that like? I'm sure you must have got some kind of pressure.
Well, you know, I remember incidents in Wakefield where it was, you know, I felt I was the only black guy in the village kind of thing. But, you know, I've got a brother and sisters. We were always brought up, and I'm sure you know, people in this room know that.
Yes.
That, you know, we were as good as everyone else. And in a sense, we didn't perceive ourselves as being a member of a black community in a black... We just lived in Wakefield. And I guess our parents gave us a strong backbones and got us to see our skin as actually something which is the safest thing you can wear in all weathers.
Yes.
So we, you know, yeah, it was interesting in the Chinese, you know, curse kind of way.
Yes.
Sometimes. But you know what? Most 90% of the people that I grew up with in Wakefield were lovely people, are lovely people, and are people I still consider to be, you know, friends. Mm-hmm. And I have not ever thought of Wakefield as a racist place in any shape or means. So, you know, I had a kind of normally challenging upbringing, actually, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So it makes you who you are today. Let's continue talking about your background, and especially those early years when we come back. This is Colourful Radio. We've got Lord Victor Olufemi Adebowale. He's both Yorkshire and Yoruba. He's from God's own county, and he's also a Nigerian man as well. He's a people's peer, he's got locks, he's tall, he's strong, and he can take the hits, he can take the knocks. So here's what you need to do. You can go to our website,
colourfulradio.com, and click on email me. You can also text us. The number is 80818. That's 80818. Start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, and then your message. Or you can give us a call on 0800 999 8090.
This is Colourful Radio.
Lord Victor Adebowale in the studio. Victor, enjoying the experience so far?
I am, yeah. This is a great radio station.
Excellent. Yeah, well, people listening do want to talk to you, and one of them is Neslin from Southwest London. Neslin, good morning.
Good morning, Henry. How are you this morning?
Very well indeed. All the better to hear you. Now you've got something to say to Victor, have you not?
Absolutely. Good morning, Lord Victor.
Hi, Neslin. Victor will do nicely.
He's a people's peer. Neslin, he's a people's peer.
Yes. Well, firstly, I want to thank you for the wonderful work you and your organisation are doing in Kingston in terms of psychological therapy.
That's right, that's right.
And, you know, it's just such an added value to this community.
Oh, that's really kind of you. Thank you very much. It's a new service. We've really struggled to design something that is really open to everyone, and I'm really, really pleased that you know about it. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm the chairman of Kingston, so
of
I'm
course,
looking
yes,
forward.
I recognise the name.
I'm really looking yes forward to really pumping that up in terms of our annual general meeting, and
thank you,
you know, make
well,
that.
But we're going to get the chief exec, the NHS, to come down and see that thing.
Absolutely,
we've talked about it. Yeah,
you know, he was in Kingston recently, so we might have to just wait a little bit longer.
Good.
But what I really want to talk to you this morning about is really black boys, and particularly the numbers of black boys who are, you know, excluded from schools.
Yeah.
And I know there's a tremendous amount of work that is being done.
Mm.
But what more, as a community, do you think we're able to do?
You know, I'm going to be probably a bit controversial here, but I think there's a number of things. Firstly, I don't think there's enough recognition in the community about the state of our black youth. I think that it's seen as someone else's problem. I mean, when I was chief exec at Centrepoint, which is a homelessness agency, more than 50% of our young people were black, and yet we had very little support from the black community, and their attitude was, you know, these are kids who don't obey their parents. And it was, like, outrageous. So I think we need recognition. Secondly, I think we need to understand that, you know, poverty and discrimination are not excuses for poor boundaries. So if you want to know the difference between a middle-class white kid that goes to Oxbridge and a poor white kid or black kid that doesn't, it's actually boundaries. And then what I mean by boundaries, I don't mean beatings. I mean boundaries that can be pushed against and boundaries that can be explored by young people in order that they know what they have to do to achieve, and parents who won't allow them to fail. And I think there's something about accepting in the black community that that's what we need to do. And I know that some people find that that kind of statement difficult, but I'm afraid it's true, because it's the only way I can explain me and people like me. I think the third thing that we need to do is people like me and you need to continue to examine and question and argue the way in which the education system works for kids that are both highly intelligent and bored, and kids that actually maybe don't have this academic type of intelligence. And this is a black and white thing, but I think there is a real challenge around stereotyping, and some recent research that shows that kids that are naughty at infant school are tagged as naughty for years afterwards. And there's also research that shows that teachers have a tendency to assign naughtiness to black boys.
Absolutely.
So there are some real problems around how the education system works with black boys. So I think those are things that we need to do. I think the final thing I'd say is that we need to do much more around the natural stresses of strains of being a black boy or girl, indeed, in this country. And that in itself is a kind of underlying radiation which can affect young people. Now, I'm saying that not because it's an excuse, but because I think we need to acknowledge it in our mental health services.
Absolutely.
Neslin, thank you very much indeed. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
I know this program is, I need to be very quick. So, Lord Victor, through Colourful, I would be very interested in talking with you about how we get a symposium together and to really get the issues out there through Colourful Radio to our communities. Because I don't think there's, as you said, there is sufficient recognition. Yeah. And if we don't address those issues, we are building up problems in mental health services, we are building up problem in criminal justice services, and we are bringing up problems in terms of employment.
Well,
you are brilliant.
I'll do whatever I can. Thank you very much, Neslin.
Thank you so much.
Neslin,
thank you, Henry.
Thank you very much indeed for calling us this morning. Neslin from Southwest London, live on The Breakfast Programme.
Victor, you mentioned there about Oxbridge and education and people who aren't necessarily academic, you know, in the education system. I know that you don't consider yourself to be somebody who was very academic.
Not particularly, no.
Yet you've risen, you've got to where you've got to.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What was your journey academically?
Well, you know, I was probably, I remember my school report saying things like, he was really good at the hard stuff and rubbish at the easy stuff. I was a slacker at school, and I don't want to pretend that, I feel quite good when people think, people say to me, well, did you go to Oxford then or Cambridge? And I say no. And actually, I wish I'd paid more attention at school in some ways, because I'm not, people often, we have a culture, I think, particularly in the black community, which is a bit denigrating of actually clever people. And I'm not a clever person in I think learning is something which, if you're not learning, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
So I've always learned. I've always struggled with my poor attention span, to be honest. And I've always been fascinated by learning. And I've recently become Chancellor of the University. And I just think that my own academic journey has been one of kind of never giving up and recognising actually in myself that, you know, I am not an academic.
That's, but you've got lots and lots of PhDs, honorary PhDs.
Yeah, University, well, I've got Central England. I've got an MA as well, but
you,
I mean,
have,
I don't...
have
but
University of Lincoln. That's,
I know,
right, you're Chancellor there, aren't you?
At me. Yeah, I am, yeah.
That's right, Visiting University professor. Of East London, but University of Bradford. My word.
Yeah,
you can see Victor's face, he's trying very much to end this line of conversation.
He's blushing in a way that only a Yoruba man can. Which is not.
In my
so
eyes.
Talking of which, okay, your background is Yorkshire and, of course, Nigerian. I was in Nigeria just a couple of weeks ago, and that was my second visit to Little Lagos and Abuja. Find it a fascinating country, immense country, very, very wealthy, tragic in many ways as well.
It is,
what are your thoughts on Nigeria?
Well, just before I answer that, can I just deal with that
oh,
last
sorry,
question?
Sorry,
just
sorry.
Briefly. I just think most employers, I've been involved in employment policy for quite a while now, and it's worth pointing out to young people in particular, most employers want will before they want skill.
Yep.
And attitude is far more valuable than aptitude, in a sense. You can learn aptitude. You can learn skills. What employers want are people that are keen, they want to learn, want to pick up, they want to deliver. So to those kids that are out there, you know, learn to be of service, I guess, and you know, you'll go far. And there's many a multimillionaire, many a successful person who aren't, you know, aren't academics. That's not what it's about, actually. Although it helps, believe me, it helps.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Now so, you Nigeria. Can't dodge it any further. Yeah. Nigeria, it's been haunting you all your life. Okay, tell me about Nigeria and your attitude towards this great nation.
My attitude towards Nigeria is, I find it quite, it's a fascinating place,
yes.
I have to say. I've never been, and which is something I
pause for sharp correct. Intake of breath,
yeah,
silence, mic's down.
I know, I've been to Africa a few times, but there's just, I mean, I'm not the world's greatest traveller, to be honest, but it is, I think Nigeria has huge potential, but I've got to be honest with you, and it is... the corruption.
Yeah.
So if you look at the oil wealth in Nigeria, and you look at the oil wealth in Saudi Arabia, you know, the Saudis built cities, sorted out their road system, built an infrastructure. Nigeria basically created fiefdoms in which there is massive wealth and massive poverty, and not a lot in between. And that's the shame. On the other hand, there's something about the Nigerian diaspora, which is, no matter what is done to us, I mean, the Yoruba in particular, you can go to all four corners of the world, in the frozen wastes and the heated deserts, and you will find the Yoruba. I tell you, the Yoruba is tough.
You know? Yes, yes.
As are the Igbo. So there's something about Nigerians. They're tough, they will survive anything, and they're incredibly resourceful.
But what is it about
something
Nigeria.
About the politics of Nigeria?
Yes.
And I think what it is that we are hell bent on the pursuit of wealth at the expense of its purpose.
Somebody once said to me, and her surname begins ends Sarawiwa. Okay, that the Nigerians are the ultimate capitalists.
Yeah,
is that true?
I think that's right. I think we. you know, it's, I think it's not the case that the West invented capitalism. I think that Nigeria is a fundamentally cash-orientated society. I think it'll change, however, I really do, and I think it has changed, but it's slow. And the reason why, one of the reasons why it's slow is the influence. It's not in the interests of some investors in Nigeria for it to change too quickly, frankly. Yeah. But I do think that it's got potential. It's got massive potential.
Are you afraid to go to Nigeria? Because I've got quite a few Nigerian friends who are born and raised in this country, and they don't go until their 20s, 30s, or in your case, possibly 40s, partly 70s. Because partly because they've just built up such a huge idea, they'd rather go to Morocco or South Africa or Kenya, but they'll leave Nigeria till the end because maybe they don't think they're ready.
I'm not so sure about that, but certainly my sisters and others have gone. I think there is... I'll tell you what worries me slightly is just that sometimes, and this is just a byproduct of going on television sometimes or radio stations, I'm sure you get this, you know, people build you up to be something.
Yes.
And as soon as you arrive, particularly if you've got a title, like what I've realised is people assume that you're incredibly wealthy.
Yes.
And so when you arrive, I'm not very good at that. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit kind of worried about that and the impact of that and people expecting things that I can't possibly deliver.
But at the same time, from the moment you touch down in Murtala Mohammed Airport, they'll roll out the red carpet for you. Hey, look at our boy done well. Because I know that MPs and peers who maintain a strong connection with a home island or home country, they become, you know, stars because creative. You know, look what we've created.
Yeah,
you know, even if there was no direct work done, it was only the parents who did the work.
I mean, I don't. It sounds a bit bizarre, but I don't really want to be feted, and I don't really want to be a star. And I think, you know, because there's only, as I say, there's only one way out of that, and that's generally down.
Yeah.
And as much as I am hugely respectful of Nigeria, and I will go,
yes,
how I go, and what impact I can have in going is something I want to think about.
This is Colourful Radio.